Everybody, welcome to Hey Kids Comics. It's Andrew Farmer here, joined as always by my hetero life mate, bath mate, face mate, and paper mate, none other than the Jedi Cole himself.
I'm Cole.
Welcome back to the show. And of course, as always, we're here to talk about some unique look at comics that came from Cole's bizarre, ever-ticking brain, that something he has conjured up from the mysterious ether.
Yes. Yes, when I was a boy in 1925, I often would dress up as Dwight D. Eisenhower. We didn't know who Dwight D. Eisenhower was at the time. But I would dress up like Dwight D. Eisenhower. And I always
put Eisenhower stories. Damn
I would always wear
We're here to talk about what was the title of this one?
This title is called Persephone Takes the Plunge. It's about identities and the crisis is therein. Like I was saying, when I would impersonate Theodore Roosevelt in 1845, I would often have the blanket.
I would put the blanket. Peter Roosevelt. Theodore Roosevelt.
I can't do it anymore. I can't do it. I can't be you. I can't do it. God, you take your identity back, man. I can't. I don't know. I make dick jokes. I can't do the history thing. That's you.
I want.
So what do we do?
Face radio.
But I will say this. That first 30 seconds was a convincing Andy. That's what that was. I was impressed. I was like, all right. I wanted to say, I'm Cole for like a year, by the way. I'm Cole.
This we had our bit of a face-off moment here.
Yes.
And that's because this is, of course, Hey Kids Comics. And I'm stalling here because it's like, what, 186?
It's 188. We're 188 now.
Good night. 188.
Yeah, for real.
Hey Kids Comics number 188. Identity theft.
Yes.
And much as we did to each other, this is about how the alter ego can become so great and so much a part of a hero or villain that whoever they are, whoever they were, becomes no more.
Right, right. The alter ego, for whatever reason, subsumes the everything else to become the you know, if you were watching the movie or reading the book Sybil, then like I had to do in high school, then you know, this is the rough and tumble New York personality that comes out.
This is your street level Sybil.
Right. This is the one that comes out and yells at everyone. That's what your alter ego becomes. It's dominant.
Let me talk to Bruce.
And that should be the title of this episode.
Yes, it actually should have been.
Hindsight is hubris, being what it is.
Well, we'll do like the Birdman thing where we put in parentheses
let me talk to Bruce. can we speak to Bruce, please? Man, he's having fourth meal. You can't talk to Bruce right now.
No, you're having fourth meal. Let Bruce out.
But yeah, I mean, that's exactly what we're talking about.
Bruce wanted a churrito. I wanted a Mexican pizza.
I wanted that
Mexican pizza.
Mexican pizza. Chalupas. Still possibly the best.
Carmelo banana, damn it.
Still possibly the best. The best invention of this show was Batman Eats Fourth Meal. That's the one man show. Batman Eats Fourth Meal.
That's right.
Oh my God. So yeah, like, where do you want to start this? Because this is something that we've talked about, you know, sometimes in the past when we talk about, I think we talked about it at one point during our, psychosis series of issues. But this is something a little different, right?
Yeah, we're going to touch a bit on Batman because Batman ultimately becomes sort of the king of the alter egos taking over. Arguably, you could say that even before he donned the suit, Batman became the predominant force, and Bruce Wayne was already being shunted to the side, and all it took was a stray bat with an ear infection or something.
Equilibrium issues.
A little vertigo, yeah, and then all, okay, I'm better now. He fluttered on out, and let me tell you, he acts it cool in the original Bob Kane pages, but really scared the bejesus out of him.
That's right. No, yeah, no, the what was to become Batman, I think, you know, that day in Crime Alley, what was to become Batman became the that psychotic. If you're looking for a psychotic break, you've got it, buddy, right there in Crime Alley.
It just needed that one last little trigger,
right?
Because it's obvious, even if you go back, you know, I'm sure it's been retrofit 100 times, but if you go back to the Bob Kane originals, the seed was planted,
right?
And they didn't explore it in great psychological detail, but it's actually there, and I think that's the beauty of that kind of innocent storytelling, that you can still look and see that it was intended that he became Batman the night his parents were shot, because what does he do? He immediately goes home and starts, found some old criminology books in the rumpus room, and started poring over those, and beefing it up, and pretty much exhausting the Wayne fortune, building things that only your butler knows for sure. But you know, he was already at it. He just didn't have a face yet.
Well, it's like one of those, you know, those people who go and they buy a their childhood home. The people that get rich somehow, whether it be the internet boom or like a lottery winner, who goes and buys their you know, two bedroom, one bath, or three bedroom, two bath childhood home, and immediately starts building onto it. You know, and it becomes this monstrosity.
Actually, build around it. I would buy some neighboring properties and plow them down so I could build a house in which, oh, wait till you see this. And then you open the door, and here is your childhood home preserved inside your adult.
God, you, if I could live in your brain for like a day. No, but what I'm saying is it's like...
You would go mad. You would have gazed into the abyss.
Yeah, God. Monsters look back, Cole. Monsters look back. what I'm getting at is that you know, you have this child, but when you immediately, you know, at age 8 or however old he was, see your parents gunned down, and if you've seen yeah. Batman versus Superman, gunned down in the most physically impossible manner, but you immediately start building that castle around your childhood. It's immediately the Batman persona, whatever you want to call it, is starts to grow. The other half doesn't find parity, so you just have this Batman persona growing around this idea of stunted childhood that never gets to flourish and become an adult, in so much as it competes against the Batman persona.
Well, that, and you have poor Alfred there, you know, once they build the mobile, it was known.
The mobile.
The mobile, yes. And he's like, well, what color shall we paint the mobile? And Bruce is like, don't paint it. I don't know what color to be. I'm leaning toward blue. Maybe red. And then the bat instant, it's black.
And now everything's
black.
Black
is night. Black is my dark soul.
And now everything has to be black. And Alfred's like, shit. Come on. Why couldn't it have been like a goldfinch? Why couldn't it?
To go down to like Mako and get the little set of cards that you fan out.
The Pantone.
Darker! No darker black known to man. It's
it's just a sad. There needs to be a cover of like Batman Year 2. You know, like Batman Year 1? A sad Batman Year 2 cover of just a trash can, like an office trash can, you know, like a wire can with in Bruce Wayne's like study, you know, the safari study that just has on the desk, you can just see the corner of the desk, and it's just the darkest Pantone four colors, and then in the trash can all the rest of them just like in the color wheel just thrown in there, and that's all that's left. Like Batman Year 2 Issue 1.
The little chain is broken and all the little cards are,
yeah, make it darker,
spread around, and then there's the like the desiccated, naturally mummified remains of that bat. He snapped its neck.
Jesus. It just took a turn.
I'm channeling that Batman, what was it, like Batman 100, you know, like 300 or something like that. It was like some special anniversary thing that they did.
Jesus.
And there was that Dilson Kevitz art thing where, you know, he like snaps the bat's neck and tosses it at the coin.
I'm not... I'm not sure if you're talking about a comic book or a Vincent Price bridge over a Michael Jackson song at this point. Broken bats' necks and thrown into pennies. Deep, creepy crawlies. Like, what are we doing? Welcome to Hell House.
That's right. The color wheel of black in the trash can. Illuminated by father's light.
Goddamn Ginsburg. Goddamn Ginsburg beat poetry happening over here. Color wheel of black, man thrown into the wastebasket of all the light. I need bongos.
Yeah.
We should do an entire episode.
This is turning into the darkest episode of Dobie Gillis ever.
We should do an entire beat poetry issue.
Oh, that would be such a challenge.
Probably with Snapper Carr. Snapper Carr's open mic night.
Yeah,
daddy-o. But no, Batman's the obvious starting point. You know, Batman is always the alpha when we're talking about anything crazy in comics. But with deference to Batman, there have been a lot of characters that kind of the same thing has happened to, and also the reverse has happened to. When you look at it's funny because if you look at Batman and you look at what basically is his mirror image on the hero side of things, which has always been Superman, you know, the world's finest. Superman has kind of the same problem, but in the opposite respect, where Superman is Superman. He's Kal-El, and Clark Kent had to be developed as Kal-El's alter ego. So it's
exactly
sort of an opposite effect. I did see a really funny panel from a comic with Superman in it, and I'm trying to remember who. It was a Marvel panel, and I think it was an old Thor comic with Nick Fury, where Thor is trying to disguise himself, and he puts on a pair of glasses at Nick Fury's behest. And he's like, how does that look? He's like, well, it feels, I don't think anybody's going to, you know, obviously this isn't going to help to fool anyone. I'm Thor. I'm 7 foot, you know, I got long blonde hair. I'm 7 foot tall. I'm huge, you know, and he bumps into Clark Kent in the comic book, with the glasses, and Clark Kent kind of stumbles over and drops his glasses, and he's like, don't I recognize? They both were like, don't I recognize you? And walked off, and it, you know, and then the last panel is Thor like, it works, it works. So yeah, that was
so does just tying your long golden locks up and taking a blue collar job.
Well, yeah, and that's kind of what I wanted, like that.
Yeah, a lot of people don't remember that Thor went legit for a while.
Right.
He went alter ego because Donald Blake was no longer part of the equation, and so he took on the construction worker alter ego of Sigurd Jarlsson, if I remember correctly.
Well, I think it's important to note now, because we have the movies, right, and the current continuity that's been in existence for what, the past probably at least 25 years, that there was a time when Thor was Marvel's Shazam, when Thor was Marvel's Captain Marvel.
That is a very good point, yeah.
Where you didn't have Thor just showing up on Midgard looking like Thor, swinging a hammer around. Thor had to get there through Donald Blake. He had to.
If Blake didn't happen to be, you know, kind of hobbling along to the park and all of a sudden, oh my god, that looks like Thor's brother. Wham! And here's Thor. You know, if he didn't happen to be there, Loki could have got away with a lot of stuff. All he ever had to do was just, like, you know, make an appointment at Donald Blake's office and not show up.
Just, yeah, low-jack Donald Blake, so you know. I mean, it's Loki. He's got, like, magic mirrors and imps and shit. Yeah. Just go sick him on Donald Blake, know where he is, and go where he isn't, and you'll be fine.
Well, before we delve into the darkness of the alter ego taking over, as it obviously does in the case of Batman, we need to delve just very quickly. There's some darkness that needs to be addressed on part of the show.
Oh, no.
That we have not touched upon, to our shame.
I touch upon darkness a lot.
I know. It's your old friend.
It came to visit me like 3 days ago.
But we haven't talked at all this year, and I guess because a lot of it just kind of uninspired as far as certain aspects go.
We've had a lot going on, though, with all due respect.
That's so true. But we have not talked about those damned San Diego Comic-Con exclusives.
Oh, man.
And this year, Hasbro is pissing off many a collector with a combination of their Marvel Legends Vault box set.
Do you think... Okay, so I know we're doing this. This is completely unrehearsed. This is going to sound like a bit, and I don't want it to. Do you think that over the weekend, let's say maybe Sunday night, maybe Monday, that we should do a special Hey Kids Comics San Diego Comic-Con exclusive?
We should probably do that, because I'm sort of was riding the fence on how much I liked the Collector's Vault and the 3¾-inch line.
Yes, yes.
And then I saw a picture today. I thought the Moon Boy figure was uninspired.
Yeah, I agree. I saw the image of that, and I was like, okay.
But I saw a picture today of the real McCoy.
Oh, did you? Okay.
It has flocked fur.
No, like the blue fur?
That's why the fur is so poorly realized in the imagery, because they put the Moss Man kind of flocking on
it. No! Gah, come on! Seriously?
So, damn it.
Oh, man.
I went there.
And, I mean, so just to mention this in, you know, before, as a teaser to what we'll do with our, our collector's vault, our San Diego Comic-Con exclusive. This set that Cole's referring to has possibly the best lineup of figures within its clutches. And the idea is that it is the collector. So
yeah,
a 3¾-inch collector with a Moon Boy, with a Lockheed, with a movie accurate and current comic accurate Howard the Duck, and I believe that is whatever that Russian talking dog is from.
It's Cosmo.
Yes, yeah, that
Cosmo
is
Cosmo from Nowhere.
God, so good.
It is sheer brilliance, and it's highly annoying. I will grant you that occasionally they've been known to re-release characters.
Yeah.
From these sets, and I can't help but wonder and pray, please God, and do it right, make it look Kirby style.
Right.
Give us a Devil Dinosaur and Moon Boy.
Well, they've got the Moon Boy, and it looks pretty damn
but
good.
I want to see a box set.
Right, right.
A Devil Dinosaur and Moon Boy. That would make me crazy.
So stay
but, yeah,
tuned.
This is
yeah.
Another annoyance, but we will touch upon that heavily.
We'll do a special.
So,
we'll do a special.
We're
going to
do a special
exclusive.
On you, Flavius.
That's right. You haven't got to say that in a while. I'm glad that we got to say that. But yeah, that's the Superman, you know, difference. That's the other side. That's the flip side of the Two-Face coin. Is the idea
the hero, the individual has to become their super alter ego, and they have to protect their reality. And a good example of just fiercely protecting the real you. Is Tony Stark.
Oh my God. And this isn't, again, you
he's,
guys
he's
are
a cool exec with a heart of steel.
I mean, you guys know Tony Stark. You guys. I'm sorry. I'm quantum. Who are you calling you people? You
That's
right. The current iterations of Tony Stark, everyone knows that Tony Stark's Iron Man. In the movies, he just gets up and announces at a press conference.
Yeah.
The comics were never that way up until recently, ever, until about Civil War time. The comics were never like that.
Oh, the level of plausible deniability, if anyone got on his scent.
Right.
You know, he would, make this stealth armor to fly to China, have his people book a flight, have someone some Tony Stark impersonator that he would send home in the suit.
Right.
So that he could be at some conference in Shanghai. And it was just, I mean, he spent a fortune protecting that identity and that dichotomy. And, you know, to the point where... You know, sometimes people are like, man, Tony, you smell like the inside of a cab. What gives?
The point at which he never takes off the suit. He's been wearing the suit. I think there was a point like that in the comics where he didn't take off the suit for like months. And it was just like horrible, gross, like...
Yeah, I mean, they literally had to get someone in there, like, they had to, you know, outsource to the Fantastic Four, so Mr. Fantastic had come up with some kind of non-sentient robot that could actually get in there and clean that thing out.
Well, they actually hired the Wrecking Crew. It was the first time.
Oh, yeah,
that call came in for the Wrecking Crew that wasn't a sting operation. Like, we need you to come out here and rip Tony Stark's armor off. Like, I've been
sure you do.
We've heard this
sure
before.
Yeah, Use your cosmic crowbar. No, really.
No, we want you to. Yeah, I bet you do. I bet you do. That's intense.
Last time we did a stint on the raft, the last time we fell for that.
That's right. Which we have an episode coming up on jails at some point in the future.
Yes, we do.
And I'm excited about that one.
Actually, have we done that before?
Who knows, man.
I think we did the Big House already.
We've done so many jails. We've done so many shows about so many things. But so let me ask you this. So what about since we're on the topic of Batman and Superman and Iron Man at that for that, right? And Iron Man is probably one of the most interesting of these because Iron Man has had so many iterations of the Iron Man armor. That all represent a different kind of identity. If you look at the different armors that he has, like he has the stealth suit, he has like knight armor, like as in like not nighttime armor, like knight and squire knight armor. He has like deep sea armor, but all of those kind of effect allow him, I think, to access kind of a different part of his id and act on certain, I guess, certain fantasies that he could, because that's what his armor is, right? I mean, ultimately, is just different compartmentalized fantasies that he has that he can act out. Like, he has a stealth armor, he has a space armor, he could make them all into one armor, but his hubris doesn't allow him to do that.
Exactly. Yeah, he could just have interchangeable, like, mitts.
Mitts.
You know, it's like change armor hands, like gauntlets, as needed. But no. Oh, no.
Oh, no. Absolutely not. Okay, so...
We have to expend valuable resources to...
So, on... I mean, somehow we're already a half hour into this show. I don't know how that happened. I know. Good night, man. So, I wanted to do this. I wanted to, again... say thank you to Cole for a recommendation that he gave me a very long time ago that I'm finally getting around to reading. And again, it's Bader Meinhof that it would dovetail into this issue of Hey Kids Comics, because I would like Cole, he's talked about it before, but he does it so eloquently. One alter ego, kind of strange alter ego scenario that I'm just now recently, I knew about, but I'm now reading page for page, is the Alan Moore Swamp Thing.
Oh yeah, that's a good example of the sort of the loss of humanity, because certain alter egos are just sort of thrust on you.
Right.
You know, you've got a lot of these guys, they choose to take up the mantle.
Right.
Of the fill in the blank, be it a bat or a hawk or a titmouse or what have you. Which, you know, that one just has not really got the traction yet that I feel it needs.
Titmouse man,
and that was the hard part was because you know the ladies be running when they see Titmouse Man coming.
Well, it sounds like a set designer for Broadway. It's like Titmouse Man. It's like,
oh yeah, that's good. It could be, you know.
Yeah,
I say my parents were European. It's Titmouse Man.
It's Titmouse Man. Titmouse Man here.
They had no idea. What they'd be putting me through as a child, but I overcame it all. But anyway, yeah, Swamp Thing is an excellent example under Alan Moore, because Moore did, what I love is when someone goes and draws from an old well, and they not only just draw forth the water that's there, they purify it, they distill it, and then they put Kool-Aid in. You know, it's like, I just was thirsty, but this is great. This is even better than just regular water. And that's what Moore does with, once he takes over Swamp Thing, once Swamp Thing was revived, actually, he literally picked up where it left off.
Right.
And took it in a whole other direction, which would seem like, how is that even possible? How do you pick up where it left off as being just sort of a lackluster monster book? You know, it was a monster hero. It just, you
right.
know, like if Count Chocula fought crime, it just, there wasn't a whole lot more to it. And Moore said, let's not dwell on Swamp Thing as the monster. Let's dwell on what it means to become this thing. And is Swamp Thing Alec Holland, whose mind is preserved in this hideous form, was he just altered physically? Apologies, because this is going to be a major spoiler if you're not familiar. Moore suggested that Alec Holland died that night in the swamp.
Right.
And the forces that created this swamp creature, basically imprinted his psyche onto this animated pile of mosses and grasses and other swamp related
flora and fauna.
And what happens when the man discovers he is not the man he thought he was, that he's an artifice,
right?
And what it took, the journey to bring him there that brought us so many amazing stories and actually served as the jumping off point for the creation of John Constantine.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Plays a major role in shepherding him through this and then becomes a big breakaway in his own right.
Yeah, it's the idea that, you know, the alter ego, what happens when there is no ego? And it's all alter ego, but your ego literally becomes your alter ego, and your alter ego is your ego, even though you didn't know that to be true until a weird British shyster magician shows you on a trip through hell. Like, that is amazing. God damn it, Alan Moore. Like, I hate you because of this. And if you haven't read the collected,
I love him so much that I hate him.
If you haven't read the collected edition, if you can find, again, I am the strongest proponent you'll ever find for, because all of these things have been re-released like time and time again, right? All the collecteds have been re-released a bunch of times. Like, you can go find the first Saga of the Swamp Thing by Alan Moore that was put out 2 years ago, you know, in a super special glossy whatever edition. Go back and find the first pressing of the collecteds from, you know, whenever it was released in the early 90s, late 80s. And it has a brilliant, brilliant foreword by Alan Moore, foreword and introduction that he wrote about the history of the Swamp Thing and where and how he got a hold of it and where he took it and how he Ostrander and then all the guys that came before him, Lin Wein and everybody, how he gave them deference and wanted to do right by them, but also he's fucking Alan Moore, so he's going to do whatever he wants with his giant beard and his brilliance and make it into what it is.
And not only does he do this, but before the big reveal, what is even more brilliant is he takes on another character whose alter ego has taken over, and that's Jason Woodruff.
Yes, yes.
The Floronic Man, and he gives you, he illustrates the struggle that this man, this animal turned plant, literally, he has gone from being a mammal to being a sentient plant, the ambulatory plant, yet he's still the man that he was, and you arrive at Jason Woodruff at a point where he doesn't know what he is anymore.
Right.
And ultimately goes even further into the depths of insanity after being confronted by the discovery of what Swamp Thing truly is.
Right. Yes. No, you're absolutely correct.
And, you know, all the cans of spray-on flexi-flesh in the world can't make him a man again.
And while we're on the topic of this type of character, right? I often feel like they can take a either mystical character, because that's what Swamp Thing ends up being, is that they're, you know, they eventually get into this whole thing where it's the red and the green, and the red is the animal life, and its avatar is Animal Man. Grant Morrison wrote before that, but Grant Morrison revived the idea of the Animal Man, where he can take on aspects of the animals.
And absolutely, and what Moore did was open the door for Animal Man to be revived in exactly the same way and become the red,
right,
to Al Moore's creation of the green, in which Swamp Thing himself or itself defies the green,
right,
because he is more human than any avatar of the green has ever been.
Right.
And he will not simply be this champion of the green, because he is actually an aberration.
Right, right, exactly.
A natural avatar of nature that had been, existed in the world since time immemorial.
And I think one of the most interesting, and what I was going to get at there was, I think one of the most interesting for me and captivating, always been very captivating for me, the alter ego, which is the transformation character. Your Shazams, your Thors, which we talked about a little bit to earlier Thors, but the one that always really captured my attention was Jason Blood, right? And
yes, absolutely, Jason Blood, the demon.
The demon, right?
Another of those Shazam-type characters that, like Thor or Captain Marvel, where you have this human catalyst through which, and Moore does a, as Moore will take anything he touches and turn and find ways to make it even more amazing. I was familiar with the demon, which is a character I think originally created as part of the King Arthur cycle in comics.
Right, yes.
He was associated with Merlin when they were used to do like all kinds of adventures taking place in days of old, where you had like, it took me a while to get the joke, the Silent Night. Because I read it so literally. I'm surprised they didn't have a Holy Night.
Right.
But what it was amazing about his take on the demon is it was well known that Jason Blood had this sort of internal struggle with literally letting that genie out of the bottle.
Right.
Yet he held within him the ability to bring forth this very powerful entity that could, you know, was super strong and could fly and belch fire. Or as one brilliant line in the that Alan Moore described it as the exhalation infernal.
That's awesome.
Damn, that's perfect.
That's downright biblical.
That's right. That was actually in hell where somebody, some other lesser demon points out, beware, brothers, he has the exhalation infernal. And what's amazing is Moore gives you this another example, this thing, and it really, when you brought up Swamp Thing, I had not really thought about this as the alter ego taking over type character. I was thinking more like Moon Knight.
Absolutely, so, Moon Knight. But
in this case, where you have Jason Blood, where you first encounter him, he's just a complete ass. And later he does explain that because he needed to maintain some kind of control over Etrigan, the demon, he warns, never strike a deal with a demon.
Right.
Because the deal he made is that Etrigan would become more like him, and he would become more like Etrigan. And that way they could strike this balance. And, of course, being human, he keeps his side of the bargain and becomes more and more like the demon himself. He becomes this humanized demon. And the demon, being a demon, becomes more like Jason Blood, becoming more like himself.
Right, right.
So as he puts it, you know, the Etrigan became more like me, becoming more like him. So there's always this constant shift in the ratio.
Well, and for me, it's the I love in most iterations of Blood, what you see is the exhausted, reluctant alter ego. The one that doesn't, the Bruce Banner, the Bloods, these guys that don't necessarily want to have it and are fighting with all of their might to keep whatever's inside of them at bay at all times because they know if they let it out in the wrong place at the wrong time, it's going to decimate everything. And that's always been good for me.
They are ultimately responsible.
Right, right.
It's not their actions, it's this creature. But they are ultimately responsible. And the Shazam alter ego is an interesting one because it's been played on to wonderful effect, again, by Moore with Miracle Man.
Right.
Which, thank God, is out of litigation hell. Where you had the character of Kid Miracle Man, who survives the decimation and never changes back into his human form because he has the mind of a child and the body of a god.
Right, right.
And so he grows to adulthood. His mind grows to adulthood in an already adult body and ultimately has to be dealt with while he has, you know, expanded his power beyond anything that was imagined in his creation. And, you know, the good boy becomes the evil.
Right, right.
Modern incarnation of himself. So it is him to all the world, but inside him is this creature, or he has become, he is physically this creature that will never let the boy back out. The genie has taken over.
Exactly, exactly. It's what happens when you give an 8-year-old ultimate power and absolutely no scruples, you know, that little tiny sociopaths, we always say toddlers are tiny sociopaths, and that's what happens when you give, you know, the infinity gauntlet to a 4-year-old, like what would happen?
Like Infinity Baby, it was just a bad idea.
Infinity Baby! I want to see Infinity Baby the comic. That's...
I do too. I want to see get so popular that eventually you have the Marvel Legends Marvel's Infinity Baby. For some reason, you had to put Marvels there because what? There was another Infinity Baby ever. Turns out it was a Michelangelo. Who knew?
Who knew? So yeah, that's. But what about? So my other question for you is, what about your characters that their alter egos have alter egos?
Oh yeah, that's one that when I was really starting to delve into this, I began to. An inkling of something came to mind, and it was the Atom, Ray Palmer.
Right.
Who I don't really know the dynamics of it. I'm afraid I didn't actually read it, but I was very aware of it because it was a big thing. A storyline that became the miniseries Sword of the Atom.
Which is a cool conceit, regardless.
Yeah, it really is, and it sounds like an Ed Wood film, but it's like an Ed Wood sword and sorcery sci-fi horror film. Sword of the Atom. But it was basically the Atom shrinks down to micro size and discovers apparently underfoot all this time was this whole race of just sort of, you know, medieval technology level brownies or sprites or some other, you know, confections.
Confections! Macaroons. Macaroons are down there. That sounds racist. Right. I'm sorry. I don't know who.
The macaroons will come find you in your sleep, and you don't want that.
Why are they Scottish? Let me tell you a story about the macaroons.
I'm trying to cast about for some sort of Gaelic folklore or something. Some sort of European, you know. Oh, yes, back in my grandfather's time, you still had people talking about the macaroons.
The punch budgies and the macaroons.
It sounds more like Brigadoon. You know, it's the bloody macaroons.
I don't know why my Irish...
Kilts are so tiny.
My Irish impersonation somehow always bleeds into Jamaican a little bit. I don't know what that is. Damn it.
You're a leprechaun with a kettle drum.
So what about Adam and the Adam and the macaroons at the center of the earth or whatever you were talking about?
That was, I don't really know where they were, but you know, everybody was riding around on bullfrogs and he basically had his normal Adam suit, but he kind of cut it back a little bit to make it more dashing and be kind of like John Carter of the macaroons. Riding around on a big frog
or a normal size frog. That's
or a normal size frog could have been and probably was but just the right size to be a mount for a macaroon. And he had his little Frodo sword and he went around and fought these, like, you know, canary yellow skinned bad guys, if I'm not mistaken. I could be off there, it's been a long time, but he just sort of disappeared. For all intents and purposes, no one knew where he was, and apparently some last son of Krypton couldn't be bothered to micro-scan the world.
Right.
With Palmer.
Right. And how many times has he saved your ass, Kal-El?
Yeah. Did he, like, have some sort of blood oath with the macaroons? He would never reveal their
It was a treaty. It was a macaroon. Yeah. It was the macaroon treaty accord.
It was the Macacarta.
Oh, damn it! God,
oh, that's bad.
That's some tasty confectionery humor. Damn it! Damn it! You're batting 1,000 tonight, Cole. Letting you. Yeah, you can bat fourth from now on. You're cleaning up.
Early time really just made me extra punchy. I don't know.
That's right.
Or I'm just either that, or I'm overcompensating because we're starting an hour earlier or something like that. But yeah, he just literally kind of just said, the rest of the world, I'm gonna go be, you know, little Atom sword fighter guy.
Is this some derivation on the Micronauts world, like that type of idea where you shrink so small
might have coincided with that, but for the bullfrogs. It's the bullfrogs that bother me. I can't imagine going subatomic and finding subatomic bullfrogs.
They're my favorite 80s or late 90s.
They used to play a lot of clubs in Dallas. It's kind of neat. the railhead or the... I'm making up my own.
The railhead! You're just like, I'll make it, I don't care. I don't care.
Some sort of abandoned railroad warehouse and become like a hip club.
You're literally just improving right now. That's all you're doing.
No, I'm just spitballing on that one. Watch, there actually was a club called the Railhead. I'm like, well, I heard about the Railhead on the show.
Wow, but, they're hip.
I have no idea. But at any rate, yeah, it may have coincided with that same period where everybody was going, you know, they're all being like Steve Martin, getting small. But I don't know whether, you know, there was really any correlation there. Micronauts may have come and gone by then. But it was almost like, you know, we're getting tired of Warlord. Hey, Adam could be like Micro Warlord.
somebody put a telegram into Mike Grell. We're going to make the Adam the Warlord.
It's the Wii World of the Warlord.
Nice. We're going to start recording an hour earlier every week because you're doing well tonight. Apparently, here's the TLDR of what this was about. Leaving his wife for having an affair, Ray Palmer winds up in a miniature village hidden in the Amazon jungle. There he finds love and something to fight for.
Oh, so it was one of those rebound
where, you know,
FWB situations?
Right, like you know, when you break up with somebody.
Bitch. I'm going to find some microscopic woman to pork. What?
Yeah, it's
the... I found the panel and I read that word for word.
It's the classic.
DC was progressive.
Right.
I'm going to find some microscopic deploy. Interesting.
I need to do this as like a best comic I ever read at some point. Because there's a... Holy hell. Like,
well, you have that coming out next weekend, you know.
Like, this entire thing is just... fantastic. Whoa. Hold the damn phone a second. I can take you to Funky Town right now, okay? Funky Town. So DC used to have
Funky Town.
DC Micro Funky Town. DC had on Cartoon Network, they had a block of TV shows. And it was like the Teen Titans show and all that back when they were running all those. They also did a thing called DC Nation where they had shorts, okay?
What?
So they did this as...
Nobody told about
this? They did Sword of the Atom as short... It's animated. It's here. I'm looking at it. As a short.
So they were like wee little animated macaroons?
Yes, they were the macaroons of the animated world, Cole.
Oh, my. How did I miss out?
And it was
on
in
that?
The style of the Brave and the Bold, so Brian Blessed Aquaman might show up. The Freddie Mercury rainbow writing.
Showing up writing an actual tadpole.
That's
why wait?
Oh!
What?
Damn it! I'm Aquaman! Yeah, so... There it is.
See
holy
friends, you wee fishes.
Bring me the macaroons.
It's down inside a pitcher plant.
Shit. No, what they do is they pan.
Rescued you, my friend.
They pan out. They keep panning out away, you know, at the end. Like, you know, they're in real tight, and they pan out, and they keep going. You know, usually it's like the town and then the world. But they pan all the way out, and it's just, you pan out from Brian Blessed's eye. It's just right there. Like, everything exists in Brian Blessed's eye. Bring me my lampshake! And where are my macaroons? Damn it.
Just a diabetic hallucination of some kind.
Diabetic hallucination. Oh, my God. Okay, so there's one more.
It's actually got his IMBD page as well.
Damn it.
Brian Blessed as himself. Diabetic hallucination sequence.
Another great band name. Listen.
What has happened to my mind?
I don't care whether you like comic books, you don't like comic books, you like Cole and I, or you don't like Cole, I don't care. If you know anybody who's thinking about starting a band, start them 188 issues ago, make them listen all the way through, I guarantee you They come out with at least 100 good band names from this show. That's
indeed. You will have no if you're looking for a new name for your garage band, if Milk Crate just isn't doing it for you anymore. We've got some. You're welcome to anything but Old Talking Cafe, because that's
ours. That's ours. We're producing. If it's not ours, we're producing now.
We're just looking for some young Scandinavians.
I mean, I found them. Well, do they have to be alive?
Yeah, not the ones you unearthed.
Oh, okay. I got to put the barrels back in the ground. That's damn it. Right.
Digging for macaroons.
That's not how. Okay. digging for macaroons. So, as we creep closer to the end of this inferno of love and passion, there's one other. When I was thinking about this topic, I started thinking about how weird legacy identities are.
Oh, yes, indeed.
And I want to do an entire show. Now, granted, we are booked up almost through 2017 at this point, but I'd like to, at the end of that, wherever the end of our schedule, I'd like to plug in a legacy character.
There might be some room in March of next year.
Right. I want to plug in a legacy character issue of Hey Kids Comics, but imagine how weird it is to be Hal Jordan. And you crash, you're flying your experimental jet, and you crash in the desert, and you crash
and
because...
You're thinking, well, the thing is, you're thinking, I am so fired.
Right, I am screwed. I'm screwed 8 ways to Sunday, and all of a sudden you look over, and there's a purple alien laying in a crashed ship, and you go, okay, I gotta go check this out. And he's like, you are the Green Lantern now. And you're like, well, all right. And then 10 years later, this guy shows up from inside of a crystal ball and's like, yeah, I was the first one. I'm magic, and I got this thing where my powers don't work against wood. And you're like, what? I've gone the last 10 years believing I was the Green Lantern, and now there's another one.
That, and it just occurred to me, your powers don't work against what's in my pants.
That's right, and I am Hal Jordan, so I'm back in all the wood. But, the Flash, too. Like, it's the same thing for the Flash. It's the same thing. All of these characters that are legacy characters, that come, like, for instance, Robin. Like, Tim Drake discovers who Batman is through his natural innate detective skills, right? Like,
absolutely.
And is thrust into this world where he's not the first Robin.
Exactly.
He's not even the second Robin. Okay, I guess you can be Robin. Yeah. Put on that suit that nobody died in, and let's go fight crime.
Skills now, Robin.
That's right. Did you detect it that you were going to have to wear this suit that a guy was bludgeoned to death in? Because you are. That's what you're wearing.
I washed it.
Well, with all due respect, Alfred washed it.
Yeah, fair.
But yeah, like that's always
man,
like
it's amazing with textiles and blood getting the one out of the other.
Because it's very rarely it happens, right? But it's very rarely someone saying I'm honoring and I really respect this character, so I ended up getting bombarded by Uranus radiation, so I gained these powers. In deference to the wizard, I'm going to become the wizard 2, or the wizard junior, or the wizette, or whatever it is. Yeah. It's very rarely that. It's like somebody's like, oh, look, it's the wizard. And then you're like, yeah,
it's
I guess
the
I'm the wizard.
The boy wizard.
Yeah, and he's like, yeah, I guess that's what I am now, pops. And he like runs off until he runs into the wizard. He's like, hey, yeah, I'm the wizard. He's like, what the hell? Like, I was the wizard. How are you the wizard? Damn it. Why does this keep happening?
In fact, it's exactly what I was thinking of as far as the alter ego taking care over. I mean, granted, it was just rife with parody and not meant to be taken seriously, but I think that was rather the point of the Tick.
Oh, yes. Oh, for sure.
The Tick doesn't know anything but the Tick. That's all there is in his world. And as a result, he becomes, nigh invulnerable. But he doesn't know who he is or why. He doesn't know why he once thought about building a Polynesian longboat. He just is the Tick, and then ultimately runs afoul of the Tick, Barry Hubris.
Right.
Who was apparently the Tick, who had like a Tick crevice with all this like Tick mobile and a Tick tank and a Tick cycle and all this other stuff. And he defeats Barry Hubris in combat and becomes the Tick, officially the Tick.
So in light of what you were just saying, right, I wanted to mention this. That this season, I don't know, do you know what the Amazon pilot series is?
Oh my, let's see.
Because what Amazon does is they release they make a bunch of pilots for new shows that they want to make for Amazon. And then they release all the pilots, and then you go watch them and kind of judge them. And then they make the TV show that gets the best bump. Well, they are remaking the Tick TV show as an Amazon pilot.
I knew that was in the works, but it was one of those things where you'd hear whispers, and then it would, like, the secret police came by, so you couldn't say anything about it. Then someone would slip you a piece of toilet paper with a note, the Tick is happening. Like, when?
The pilot episode.
Here's the internet. Why do I not find anything about the Tick?
The pilot episode's the 19th of August. It's available to anybody who has Amazon Prime. So if you are out there and you have Amazon Prime, watch it so that we can get a full season.
Or just stream it. You don't even have to watch it. Just
put it on.
Something. Yeah, put it on a tablet. You're not using anything. Just so they register.
Do it a bunch of times. Yeah, just do it a bunch of times so that we can get the Tick.
Appear to all, for all intents and purposes, to have watched it 10 or 12 times.
It looks.
Your assignment.
It's got Jackie Earle Haley in it.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. It's got Peter.
He's brilliant in The Preacher, by the way.
Is he?
Oh,
I haven't. See, I haven't watched it enough yet.
Haley exudes creepy as Odin Kincannon.
Oh, damn! I bet he does. I absolutely bet he does. Gross. That's
Lord.
The only word that I can come up with for that is gross. So Peter, and I can never pronounce his name. Serfenowicz. He's the comedian. He was one of the two guards from Guardians of the Galaxy.
The little imp that plagued Superman.
Yeah, right. He's Mixleplix.
If you say his name backwards, then he disappears.
Everything I see this guy in, I absolutely love, and he's playing the Tick. And he was there were two guards. One was John Riley or John C. Riley
yes, so the Zendarian.
Yeah, and the other one, the two that were there for comic relief. Yeah, the Nova Corps. So there was John C. Reilly, and then the other one. The other one is the guy who's playing the Tick. And I've seen him in a bunch of stuff, and he's friggin' hilarious. So I am very much looking forward to this. But I wanted to get that in before we got any further. Watch the Tick, Amazon Prime, August 19th.
Oh, you know it. I will watch that as many times a day as I can manage. I will turn it on at work where there are no speakers and just let it run in the background.
Just, we're going to start a movement. This isn't a moment. This is a movement.
That's right.
So why don't we wrap this up and get out of here? Because we've somehow, and I honestly have no idea, have managed to go right up against it. I don't know where this episode went. I don't know where this issue went.
I think that the alter ego of this episode took over. We will be re-exploring, I am certain, identity theft, because there is so much more ground to cover, because there were characters we just never got to, and characters we probably hadn't thought of yet.
Right.
And so be sure and write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com if you feel like you know somebody. Why didn't you mention this guy? Yeah. And or if you want to absolutely confirm that you can use one of the band names.
Yes.
We can... you can find tweets from us on Twitter at The Jedi Cult U. Be sure and check us out every week here at the Jedi Cult Universe, JediCult.com. And about a week after you hear this episode, you can find me, Jedi Cole himself, along with my Ranker Pit co-host, Eddie Medina, hosting the costume extravaganza at Infinicon in lovely Addison, Texas at the Crown Plaza. It is not produced by the folks who put on AltCon, but the formatting is very similar. They're kind of companion shows. They each have each other's blessing. AltCon has allowed them to pretty much be almost a clone, but it's just so full of its own original stuff. It's like that summer AltCon you always wanted, but with its own flavor. I'll be there doing some game shows. If you're within the sound of my voice and can come to Infinicon, be sure and book your tickets. Use the code CAPTEXAS, CAPTX,
CAPTEXAS,
at checkout, CAPTEXAS, to get a discount on your passes. And Mrs. Jelly Cole will be running the ticketing booth as well. So we're all going to be out there in mass, and if you get a chance, do show up. I don't know when it's going to be scheduled yet, but do try to come to Jedi Cole's Speed Guesting, where I'll be hosting a very lively talk show in which lucky audience members get 5 minutes to be a guest of the show. And then we have to ring the bell and get the next guest up there.
That's a really great – I like that. That's nice.
Yeah. Be sure and check out this variation of speed dating, speed guesting, only at Infinicon.
All right. Well, guys, thank you for joining us this week. This was a fun one for us. I know it was, because we went a little crazy, off-board, nutty. And we don't get to do that. You know, there wasn't a lot of research in this one. It was just kind of off the cuff for us, and we really enjoyed it. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it. And join us next week for more Hey Kids Comics. And
well,
as
if you want to join us next week, comic book buddy Sanders wants you to know that Caucus on the Universe, Hey Kids Comics number 189. You don't want to miss it. This is your right as a citizen to be a part of the process.
I have a good brain. This is going to be a good show. I do comics good. I'm the best at comics. I guarantee you. We're going
to
build that wall, and we're going to get the Kree to build it for us. We're going to make the Marvel Universe great again.